Tonight, Ukraine declaring a national state of emergency as the U.S. warns a full-scale Russian invasion may be imminent.
Russian forces have reached an area just north of Ukraine's capital city as they continue their advance into the country.
Tonight, the world is waiting to see just how far Putin's 190,000 troops will go into the country of Ukraine.
These troops you can see over here, they are Russian airborne forces.
Germany's top diplomat put it in stark terms. We woke up in a different world today.
As the war in Ukraine continues, we at Calvary San Diego have learned more of what it looks like to be a local church with a global heart.
Well, refugees fleeing the violence in Ukraine are coming into the United States.
The Ukrainian refugee crisis has taught us our responsibility as Christians to reflect God's global heart of love to the world around us. Part of that is understanding that we can't always fill every need, but what we can do is be open, flexible, and willing to help in every way we can. Through this, God has shown us how he is present and cares for all people in any season of life. This is not the story of heroes helping those in need or those in need showing others how to be heroes. In this season of Crossing Cultures, we share our story about how God brought his love to the forefront of all of our lives in the midst of tragedy.
Hi, my name is Phil Metzger, and in 1992, I moved to Moscow, Russia. From there, I lived in the beautiful Central European country of Hungary, where my family and I spent the next 20 years living, learning, and sharing about Jesus. Different foods, culture, and language, but underneath it all, we discovered the most amazing people. We learned that to share the gospel effectively, we had to adjust. We had to cross cultures. Now we're back in the U.S., and we're discovering that this country is a melting pot of culture. This show is committed to helping Christians connect to those who think, believe, and live differently than them. This is Crossing Cultures.
As we prepare for this season of Crossing Cultures, we decided to sit down with our staff and talk about our involvement in Russia's war on Ukraine. This conversation will be sprinkled throughout the entire season to paint a picture of our experience with the refugees in Ukraine and in San Diego.
All right, you guys, so here we are. We're recording this for our season 4, if you can believe it, of Crossing Cultures. When Luis and I were planning this, we had been already recording conversations with this guy from Wheaton College, Dr. Brian Howell, and they were amazing conversations. And then all of a sudden, our whole lives kind of all changed. So we're redoing season 4 to be this amazing opportunity we had. We kind of named the overall like the Ukrainian refugee crisis, which I think is like dramatic to what really happened. I don't know what we'd call it, the Ukrainian privilege, the friends we made or something, you know, something like that. But what I want to do is just kind of walk through the last couple months of our lives, what the Lord did. We've had these conversations already, but dang it, we didn't record them. And so we thought, let's just sit down and do this. And but what I thought would be fun to do is like, you know, me and Frankie and Luis were talking about this yesterday, was like, we all have our jobs here. And then like what we all did during that, during that time, because I think it's hard for people to fathom the insanity of what was that month of our life, you know, right? So let's just talk through kind of, you know, maybe not even the themes, like maybe we'll let themes come up as we just have conversation about kind of what we've all been a part of. But let's go back to the kind of the beginning of it all. You know, it kind of started like, I think something that people didn't know about or don't know about is that it started for us as a church by, remember, we were praying starting in January.
For Sasha, right?
You remember that? Yeah, Sasha. Mm. Yeah, Sasha, the chaplain with the Ukrainian military, she was sending us videos, right? We started showing them. People started getting interested. And then...
Well, that was powerful just to start with that, because I remember... There's a lot of people, they were kind of uncertain, like, what's going to happen with Russia? They're on the border of Ukraine. And, like, if we can go back to January, they were still, like, an unknown. People, you know, even our friends in Ukraine were like, oh, it's not going to happen. They're not going to take Kiev, or they're not going to go into Ukraine. But things were starting to, like, definitely, like, Rumble. And so I remember when you had that video, Sasha, and she kind of broke down at the end. I mean, that was powerful for our church, just to put us in like, oh, the church is, our church is way bigger than just what's happening here in our local community.
We as a church played that video of our friend Sasha on January 30th, 2022. Here's a clip from that service.
Last week, we prayed for kind of just people and the situation that's happening in Ukraine. And of course, it's getting a lot of attention in the news right now, rightfully so. I asked a friend of mine who I mentioned to you, she's a chaplain on the front lines there in Ukraine. She sent me over a little video that she wanted me to share with you all, and just so that we'd know how we could pray a little better. So let's roll that.
Hello, Pastor Phil and Christian brothers and sisters. My name is Sasha. I'm from Kyiv, Ukraine, from Calvary Chapel. For last almost 7 years, I've been living at the frontline cities and villages, ministering as a chaplain, missionary, and volunteer for our Ukrainian army. I just want to thank you for praying for us, and we need lots of prayers, because even though the war has been going little by little throughout the 7 years, now of course we have a threat of active combat and active war where thousands of people can perish.
Keep in mind, this video was sent to us on January 29th, 2022, almost 1 month before the war started. In fact, the war has been boiling up for several years before this video was taken. Phil interviewed our friend Sasha to talk about the events in Ukraine leading up to February 24th, 2022.
I think something that we're constantly trying to remind people is that really war began like 8 years ago, if I'm not mistaken.
Exactly. Exactly.
And so that was, you know, after Maidan and then the annexation of Crimea, and then fighting started in the east quite a long time ago. And you've been involved in serving as a chaplain there for how many years now?
Eight.
The whole 8 years you've been there. Yeah.
Yeah. You remember that we had a Revolution of Dignity, you know, Maidan. And so it was basically a revolution where we wanted to overthrow our corrupted government. And our church and many other churches, we felt like we need to support people who want to do that, because God is never for corruption. He is against corruption.
While most of us in the West associate February 24th, 2022 as the beginning of the war between Russia and Ukraine, the truth is war came to Ukraine many years earlier.
Protesters confronting security services who respond with live ammunition.
On the 20th of February last year, when a massacre of protesters on Kiev's independent square known as Maidan led to the overthrow of Ukraine's government.
Fallen bodies on the streets of Kiev.
In January 2014, protests turned to rioting when the pro-Russia president of Ukraine tried to move the country economically and politically further from the West and closer to Russia. When the pro-Russian president couldn't get people to stop protesting, he created laws forbidding them. This only fueled the people more to stand up for their rights.
They were killed by snipers directly with the metal bullets with guns.
The government turned on people, and more than 100 were killed and another 2,500 injured.
This morning, ABC News cameras captured brutal scenes. Protesters gunned down by security forces.
We are not terrorists. We are free people that want to live in a free, in a good country without corruption, with good laws, with good standards of living.
And so then, when Maidan was successful, we knew right away that Russia will not forgive. Russia will not just let us go. It will attack us. And that's what happened. And so the war started. Basically what they did, they just provided weapons and all kinds of lies and TV lies and propaganda in the eastern part of Ukraine, Donetsk and Lugansk area. And they said that people there, they did not like this revolution, and that this revolution was organized by ultra-Nazi and things like that. And so they basically tried to start that war inside Ukraine, civil war.
but everybody knew that it's Russia.
Here's Ben Morrison speaking on what the last several years has been like in Ukraine leading up to February 24th, 2022.
The war has been going on for 8 years.
Yeah.
So this is certainly a new phase of it, right? Yeah. When they started it back in 2014, you know, Russia kind of, you know, pretended like it was locals, you know, that it was all kind of within the country. It wasn't. I mean, it was all, you know, Russia, you know, the Kremlin kind of funding it, pushing it.
Right.
In March 2014, an unknown militia group took over the airport and parliament building in Crimea. They raised the Russian flag, removed the Ukrainian elect officials, and installed a pro-Russian leader. Russia's claim was that they quickly moved troops into Crimea to protect their citizens. On March 6, 2014, the Crimean parliament voted to leave Ukraine and become part of Russia. To this day, Crimea remains in Russian hands illegally, similarly to how Russia is trying to annex part of eastern Ukraine today. Phil and Wayne Check had a discussion on how this entire war had an effect on Ukrainians as well as the churches in that area.
Look back through the prism of time, which for us, this has been going on for 8 years. So we've been living in this since the mass shooting on February in 2014, the Maidan Revolution of Dignity. And then we put in brackets, and against corruption. They never quite finished that bit, but the dignity part was true. And so this is an ongoing event. And I actually look back to see how God has miraculously forged a people that has now been able to do what we're seeing in real time. So for me, the emotions were in 2014 and after the mass shooting and we evacuated people, I just went back home and looked at YouTube and I cried for weeks. I mean, literally it was. And then of course annexation happened and it was dread. It was like, oh my goodness, this is, you know, Goliath was slain and now we're up against the Titanic. I mean, this is totally different. But God miraculously held the country and it was like a house of cards that you keep pulling your card out and the whole thing's supposed to collapse and God miraculously holds the country. And then we saw the amazing Christian response back then. And so the model of what you're seeing the church do now is the same model that we saw as Christians where everyone was doing whatever they could wherever they found themselves to be. And then the Christians went forward to the places where literally were hemorrhaging and planted churches. And we saw a chaplaincy movement that is now. So you go from communism to now within the military and the police force, there are spiritual born again chaplains that are there seen as a vital role of what's going on.
This is where people like our friend Sasha have played a role in serving soldiers in Ukraine for many years before February 24th, 2022.
Chaplain's ministry was very new for us. We knew some friends who were chaplains, but very, very few. And I did not want to go to the front line first because I thought I'll meet friends, I'll see soldiers who will become friends and then they'll die. Because people were already dying. And so I thought I'll have, you know, all kinds of high blood pressure issues and heart issues and things I'm having now.
Yeah.
And so I prayed and I didn't know what to do, how to do. I didn't have a uniform. And I was invited in 2015 to go to Stanitsa Luhanska, which is like 4 miles from the front line. And 8 of us, we went and we started a Christian volunteer center there. It was after Stanitsa Luhanska was freed from being occupied, because it was occupied in 2015. And so after a couple of months, I decided that I cannot go back and forth. I have to move. I have to move to Stanitsa Luhanska and live there constantly and help and minister. And so my pastors, they laid hands on me. They said, okay, we now ordain you as a deaconess. You go, you minister, you do whatever God has called you to do. You're our missionary. and things like that. And so it was hard, much shelling, much fighting, lost one friend there during fighting. And God was opening the door to minister to soldiers.
And so, you know, before the war, again, before 2014, a lot of people looked at, you know, Protestant Christians as kind of like, well, you guys are kind of a sect, right? Like, right. You're, you know, you're sort of a cult. Right. You know, we're not quite sure who you are and why you're not part of like the Eastern Orthodox Church. You know, but as time went on, you know, there was no chaplaincy, for example, in Ukraine. And the vast majority of people who became chaplains to serve the soldiers were, you know, Protestant pastors and ministers. You know, the people who were doing a lot of the housing of that, again, this is back in 2014, the first wave of refugees that came just out of the, you know, the small section in the east that has been controlled for 8 years. I mean, it wasn't small, it was like 2 million people, which is a lot, but it's a lot less than right now. You know, now we're up to like 12 million refugees and internally displaced. Yeah, but a lot of the churches, Protestant churches, you know, were the ones kind of ministering to these people. And all of a sudden you would find like people's attitude in general in the culture shifted to where it's not like, oh, you guys are that weird cult. It was like, oh, you guys are the ones who help people.
As you've already heard, since 2014, the local church has been ministering to the Ukrainian people as they fight for their country. This brings us back to the video of our friend Sasha. It was sent to us 1 month before Russia invaded Ukraine again on February 24th, 2022. Here is the rest of the video we received from Sasha.
So please pray for us. Pray for God's mercy. Pray for me as I share God's word. Our army is ready to fight for sure. They're ready. They're brave. They know God is with them. They know they protect their land that was given to them by God. And I don't have a plan. I don't know what will happen. I pray at night and I go to bed and I'm happy to wake up in the morning. Sometimes we hear some shooting and some explosion and things like that. My friends, my soldiers are telling me that sometimes here and there snipers are working. So please pray, because we need to fight. We need to be strong. We really need to represent God, and I need lots of wisdom and support. So we want to praise the Lord. I, with my soldiers, I want to praise the Lord. I want to thank Him forever. And so He's worthy of praise. And it's just nice to know that such powerful God is with us. It is really nice. So may God bless you, and God bless America, and God bless Ukraine, and God bless all the good people. We love you guys, and thank you again for being a church who cares and who prays and will fight, and God already has victory. So amen.
And I remember, like, people were praying for Sasha. You were giving updates. She was giving us updates. So you're right. That's kind of where that's what started our church's, the vision to be praying towards Ukraine was with Sasha.
We had a conversation with our friend Paul Billings about his experience in Ukraine, as well as his perspective on the war leading up to February 24th.
Paul, talk through that, like that, just that season, like right when things started happening. What was going on in you and Mel, your heart, your mind? Right. So like, to give context for people then watching or listening, it's like, this is not like a short-term mission trip kind of a thing. Melanie was literally raised there. And in many ways, you know, I've been with you a long time. So were you as an adult. This was home.
Yeah, sure. Definitely Ukraine has and always will have a huge part of our hearts. So when we... You know, it's crazy because leading up to the war, right? I mean, everybody would probably remember the news and all the warnings and Russia building up their military. I think what I was expecting was something like what had been happening since 2014, right? Where they just kind of take a small piece of land, you know, and kind of say, well, there was Russian speakers there, you know, so this was kind of us, you know, liberating. But nobody, I don't think anybody really thought that they would invade all the way to the Capitol. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, so that was, it was very shocking, you know, and obviously having, you know, Melanie's three of her brothers live there with their families, a lot of small kids. And as things got closer, we could kind of sense that something was bigger than we were anticipating. So we were talking a lot with one of Melanie's brothers about sending his family out. He was living in Kyiv, you know, right. That's where they live. That's their home. So thankfully they did do that. They were able to do that, but you know, he stayed until after the invasion when they started, you know, bombing Kyiv, and he had a pretty hard time getting out.
It felt like each week it started to get a little bit more serious, right? Like, oh dang, like this is getting real. And then February 24, the war started.
Overnight, in the capital of Ukraine, the sound of missile strikes and air sirens.
Authorities, meanwhile, have told residents there in Obolon to stay off the streets as they say active hostilities are approaching.
Explosions rocking several cities, including the capital of Kyiv.
On Thursday, the full force of the Russian military was released. From the air came planes, helicopters, and missile strikes.
This full-scale invasion of Ukraine, the largest invasion of a neighboring country in Europe since World War II.
It's scary, you know, like there is a terror that grips you that is, it's hard to explain, you know. It's not like, obviously people respond differently, but when you have your wife, you know, and your young children with you, it's really scary. You know? And so I was talking to one of Melanie's brothers on the phone as they're driving, they're trying to drive out of Ukraine. And this is early on when all the borders are backed up for kilometers and kilometers and people aren't able to get out, you know, and they're, you know, they have, I don't even know how many people, they had their, you know, 8-passenger van, probably 20 people packed in there, you know, and they're driving for, I think, I don't even know where they were easily 24 hours yeah. in the car, you know, longer than that. But I was just talking, I was like, hey, like, how are you doing? What's going on? He says, well, we're trying to get to Hungary. You know, we know a place that we could at least stay there. And I said, well, you know, we're thinking about meeting you guys there, you know? And he said, you know, that would be really, really nice, you know? And so, yeah, we just went kind of with the initial heart of receiving like our family, and then even some of our friends, our Ukrainian friends that were coming out as well. And just because, I mean, how do you process that, right? You're like in your home and literally, you know, in less than a day, you're out of your home. You've had to leave everything. You don't know if you'll ever see your home again. You know, you're talking to your friends who are further east and their homes are already being destroyed. You know, it's just, it's things that most of us will never have to process, you know, very difficult things to process. So we wanted to be there with them, you know.
I think that was that was one of the things that really struck a lot of our people here in San Diego, is they were befriending and housing Ukrainians coming across into the States. You know, you start talking to people and you realize they have, you know, I think when we think of like refugee as a traditionally, you always associate that with, you know, they already didn't have a good life. Whether we think that way or not, consciously, subconsciously, we do. Especially here in California, where most people coming up are trying to leave cartel wars or, you know, third world environments that are really already terrible. And so you kind of become, I think a lot of San Diegans become, and Californians become, kind of numb to the idea of migration.
Sure.
And then you start talking to Ukrainians who, oh, I owned my business. We had a wonderful life. We enjoyed our family. We enjoyed our lives. And then it was just gone. And that is such a disassociating concept that, like you just said, Paul, I don't think we can really grasp it in its fullness, like to lose everything, or the fear of losing everything. And as you said, it wasn't a chipping away. Things moved very quick across a lot of the country. And, you know, yeah, they didn't take it over. Russia didn't win those things, but the fear was almost immediate.
Our missionary friend, Ben Morrison, who you heard earlier, had his own unique firsthand experience with the war. Phil sat down with him to talk about his church's perspective in Ukraine.
You know, all people that are probably U.S. citizens here, you know, we're getting emails from the embassy beginning back in, you know, early January saying, you know, this could happen, you should consider getting out. And then kind of the closer we got, it was, you know, we really strongly urge you to leave. You know, but I mean, obviously our ultimate king is Jesus, not any consulate. So, you know, we prayed about, you know, what it is that God would have us to do. And, you know, just really, really we're convicted that, you know, we need to stay. And I mean, if we take off, like, who's going to serve all these people here? You know, and there was a number of factors as well. I mean, we're in, you know, we are further east than Kiev, but we're on the west bank of the Dnieper River that divides the country in half. We're kind of central Ukraine, so we're not, you know, super near to any of the front lines of fighting. During the first weeks when they were coming in towards Kiev in the north, we were sort of, you know, we were sort of surrounded like on three sides. You know, so after they pushed the Russian forces out of the north, then it's just the east and the south that there's, you know, a lot of activity on right now. So yeah, I mean, you know, really the first day we already had, I think like a dozen refugees coming. I mean, it was chaos those first, you know, first few days. I was woken up, we had sent out my previous assistant pastor to plant a church, in a city further east, on February 24th, I got woken up by a phone call from him, you know, saying they're bombing the city, we're coming back, you know, to guys. So that was how my morning started on February 24th, you know, and it was just, you know, scrambling and adrenaline and people were just flooding out. I mean, you know, and very quickly we realized we were going to, you know, be serving a whole lot of refugees. So yeah, the dynamic has changed. I mean, now in month four, you know, the very beginning, it was all the people who, you know, they had their own cars, you know, mostly young families. They were, you know, they were kind of quick to get up and leave. And most of them only stayed in. I mean, we, thankfully, in God's providence, we actually had been working on procuring our own church building, kind of building it for the last 5 or 6 years. And we only just got it ready last year. So it's ready kind of just in time. And we've, you know, we've been able, at this point, we've housed over 300 refugees in the church building. Those first days, it was just like, you know, most people came for a night and then they just headed on as fast as they could. So as time has gone on, they've, you know, stayed for longer. And now more and more, you know, we're actually the ones doing the evacuations now, because a lot of the people that are still left in the very dangerous areas, part of the reason is because they don't have their own transport probably. So we're actually, you know, we've been able to acquire a couple vans, to go in and get people out. So just a couple of days ago, we did this seventh run that we've done, to pull, you know, people out of areas that are, I mean, very directly, you know, being shelled, like our drivers were like, you know, it was loud. So yeah. Yeah. And I mean, in the midst of, I mean, it's, you know, it's awful. It's evil. You know, we're praying all of the Psalms, especially the imprecatory Psalms, you know, for God just to smash these evil intentions of, you know, Putin and his whole circle of people there, you know, and those who are just trying to cause destruction, against, you know, a country that was not provoking them in any way.
This time around, as things were beginning to heat up, I mean, we have Russian pressure every year.
This is Wayne Check again, talking about his perspective in Ukraine within the past 8 years.
For most Ukrainians, the situation was, you know, they're going to stand down because that's what they always do. They're just hanging over the fence, you know, just threatening, and they end up backing down after getting some sort of political concessions or whatever. But through OM, we were getting the intelligence reports and preparing contingency plans if, and you know, where will you be if this happens? Oh, here we go again. So actually, the guys that were leading us through that pretty well prepared us weeks in advance. And then I went to sleep the night before it happened, thinking this may be the last full night's sleep that I get. And I was able to get a full night's sleep, and we woke up to explosions in the morning. So it's not the word dread, but it's like, right, this is what we were preparing for. Mm-hmm. We've been here before. Like, even now I get the goosebumps remembering that moment. But we clicked in and we were prepared because I had fuel saved up, and we had cash reserves, and we moved to that step. So we were more prepared than a lot of the Ukrainians who have, you know, been lulled into we live with war going on, and so sort of like denial in a way. But I mean, I got my church leaders together a couple times and said, guys, well, what, you know, are we going to do something? Are we going to do something? And it's like, oh, attacking Kiev is ludicrous. I mean, that's insane. Right. You just can't take a city of, you know, 3 million people. And that's the whole thing was, what happened on the scale is pretty much the most extreme that you can get without taking non-conventional warfare. So, and every single analyst was saying they don't have enough troops. They don't have enough troops. They don't have enough troops, and they've had to abandon the whole northern area. So they've made so many big mistakes that you have three categories. You have one, what the Russians did, and their the mistakes that they made, and their mindset, believing their own propaganda. I mean, they thought all of the revolutions were paid for by the CIA. So when you think that, oh, it means if they're paid for, we just need to put pressure on. And apparently that's been proven differently now. So you've got the Russian mistakes, then you've got the Ukrainian response. If this happened in 2014, Ukraine would have fallen. Like, it's absolutely. But God has prepared. That's the third thing, is God has been miraculously in this mix. And I use the analogy of the only time in the New Testament where yeast is used in a positive way. You know, the kingdom of God is like this, where the yeast in the dough, and then what do you get? It goes through the whole dough, and we see an amazing different product. And the Christians, like in 2014, building upon that, have been totally mixed into this equation. And it's been a beautiful thing to see.
Just as Wayne mentioned, God is at work in every place in our lives, even in the midst of tragedy. And the local church has a huge role to play in that. Paul Billings and Ben Morrison continue this thought in their conversation with Phil.
You know, when you think about, you know, just migrants or people or refugees coming, you know, like, we don't necessarily have the answers for these problems, right? I mean, these issues are huge. They're way beyond us. But
yeah,
as the church, I don't know that we are maybe directly called to, you know, solve those kinds of problems, but we are called to be with those people.
Amen.
All, you know, and so I think that's where, you know, we have to be there. You know? And so that was cool to see San Diego, you guys, and many people there in the States respond the way. And churches, man, all over Europe. I mean, I was shocked. I was genuinely shocked at the just how quickly churches were willing to help and do anything they could, how generously they were with finances, but also getting involved themselves. Church.
I mean, the generosity of and the immediate like investment of everybody's, you know, not money investment only, but just like life. Like we're helping. It was like kind of like a, there was all this like fear that was happening on one hand for us, but then on the other hand, it was like, I've never seen this kind of outpouring. Well, let me ask you about that, Ben, if you don't mind. Yeah. I want to ask you about, like, what have you seen, you know, been there month four in terms of like just like gospel outreach? And, you know, because, and I was just talking with others about this, you know, I think for so long, you know, people that are outside of the church and outside of the Christian faith, they look at the church kind of with suspicious eyes, like, what is it? What is the church? And it's a broad-ranging perspective. Some are like, oh, it's cute, let them have whatever they do, it doesn't matter, to kind of outright, like a resistance to the idea of the church, because, you know,
Like, what are they? What value do they bring? And I think at least in Ukraine, I could say, and I'd really love your thoughts into this. I think that most of Ukraine is acknowledging the great value of the church. I'm saying the big C church. What have you seen these last 4 months from that perspective? This idea of like the work of the gospel, not just to preach a Sunday morning sermon, but like really the work of the gospel in the country these last 4 months.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know, obviously when we're trying to share both practical help, obviously, you know, they're coming, they need a place to stay, they need to be fed, you know, we're feeding not only the refugees that are staying in our building, but over 500 refugees in the city every week, you know, are coming, getting food. But also, you know, to bring them hope, because that's something that, you know, is really lacking, you know, when you have to abandon your home, when you've had, you know, we had one old couple that came and their car literally was like shot through with bullet holes. You know, their windows of their car had been blown out by rocket explosions. You know, I mean, that's to different degrees, but, you know, some of these people are coming very traumatized, you know, so, you know, we just try to you know, let them know they're in a safe place. We don't try to like jump on them and evangelize them or anything, you know, but they end up asking questions like, you know, well, why, you know, why are you doing this, why are you here, and, you know, how are you, because they see that, you know, we're still hopeful. So, you know, how are you keeping this hopeful mindset? You know, we had one guy who was actually, you know, he was so the default kind of religion here is Eastern Orthodox Christianity. He was asking, he's like, so explain to me, why are you so joyful? Like, that was his question.
Love it.
He's like, you know, because I'm used to going to church and people are, you know, kind of very serious, yeah, and kind of downcast, and you know, and so we just kind of started talking about the gospel, like, because it's actually really good news, because, you know, Jesus has already done everything. It's not up to you to earn it. You know, and at one point he turns to his wife and he goes, now I understand. He's like, it's because it's all finished. I'm like, exactly. And that guy, that was a couple that ended up staying in our city. He's now, a week or two later, he hangs out a lot, helps serve other refugees, ended up praying to receive Christ. He's now a member of our church.
No way. Wow. Yeah. That's... Oh, I just love it. And we're hearing this all over the country, truly, like in the hardest, in the easier, in the softer, whatever it might be, we're hearing, you know, and again, it's that like idea that God brings beauty out of ashes. And we don't want to, you know, in no way am I minimizing like the pain of what people are going through. But I just think it's important that people also see that, like, this is where, you know, and I was talking with Paul Billings not that long ago about this idea that the local church is an amazing, beautiful, dynamic entity that God has created globally. You know, like I always told people here, the church is the largest aid agency, if you want to see it that way, in the world, because we're everywhere. We're able to jump in right away.
We titled this episode Without Hesitation, because we saw how the church responded to the overwhelming need in Ukraine when things went from bad to worse. This looked like local churches around the world playing their part in helping Ukrainians in their time of need. The needs in Ukraine were immediate, much like Paul the Apostle describes in Titus 3:14, when he says, "Our people must learn to do good by meeting the urgent needs of others. Then they will not be unproductive." Through the church's response to the urgent needs in Ukraine, we saw God do a work. He brought hope to Europe despite the heartbreak of war and evil intentions of world leaders.
It felt like it caught everybody off guard. Like, yeah, this is actually happening. You know, obviously, like, that's when our whole, like, experience of, like, just decisions being made immediate. No more, like, you know, let's wait till our Monday staff meeting to talk things through and have a conversation. It's just kind of like, it just has to happen. I think it was that same week we were like, well, I think it was like the day of the war starting, like, okay, what should we do? Because we were planning on going somewhere. It was like, I don't know if we were planning on going somewhere, or like we were thinking of the spring break, like to take Hannah somewhere or something.
Such
like that.
It's such a blur, the timing. Because I remember thinking, you're going to go. You're going. And we had a prayer meeting Friday, and I was like, yeah, Phil's probably going to be going out tomorrow. I didn't know that we were all going.
Yeah, and we left like the 2 days later.
We got a ticket the next day, yeah.
Yeah, so it was all like boom, 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 boom. And then we spent that time, and we're going to have those conversations with other people, but we spent that week there. And I think that did something for our church, that feeling of like we're involved, huh?
The fact that you were going and then that you were there, and I remember having this shift like, oh, no, we're directly connected to what's going on.
It became very personal.
The prayers were, not that I wasn't like moved to pray for Sasha, but like, I do life with you and you and Hannah, and you guys are there. So it's like, oh my God, it's like I'm just really praying for everything that's going on in a different way.
Wow. Yeah, it became real.
Yeah. For sure.
Well, the other thing too that was really, our church got very involved because we raised a lot of money in about 2 days. Mm-hmm. Remember that whole thing?
Oh my God.
The text message.
That was like,
how are we forgetting this?
We couldn't go to the bank. You. Remember, we couldn't go to the bank because we didn't have enough time.
No.
We just asked people to give us cash. Yeah. And that we were going to reimburse them.
How much cash did you have in your carry-on?
$35,000, I believe.
Just in his carry-on.
So like literally in 1 day, we raised $35,000.
Yeah, because I think we sent it out the night before, right?
Phil sent the text to various people in our congregation on Saturday, February 26th, which read, "Hey friends, this is a bizarre text, but I need cash today. This text is actually not a scam or a joke. Haha, not a fake text. I need to get as much cash as I can to take to Hungary and Ukraine. We won't be able to get enough out of the bank in time, but the church can write you a check for any amount if you bring it to church today." End of text. This was such an odd text to receive, but even still, our congregation quickly responded and put together over $30,000 overnight. In fact, the money was coming in so fast that by 2 p.m. that Sunday, our financial manager, Ben Ortiz, asked people to stop giving. We had reached the monetary limit that was allowed on the flight.
Yeah, you did send it out. If you have cash, too, we're going to meet tomorrow morning, bring some in, and see what we can come up with. And yeah, it was like almost $30,000.
Yeah, it was like something like that.
It's funny how simultaneously something like so crazy with money, and even if we tried to strategize or try to make this, which obviously we could never, but it was like the most natural thing for us, for me, and for Hannah, it was like, we're going home. We're going back to what we know. But it was like the moment of like, I feel like a pivot point as our whole team and our whole church became like, it became personal. Like our lives came together. Mm-hmm. But we didn't try to do that. You know, we didn't want
like two
war.
Worlds became one world. Yeah.
We didn't want war to make that happen. Obviously not.
And then the generosity and the lack, there was no hesitation from the church to like, what do you need? Here we go.
Yes.
And then that moment and just that Sunday in those few hours to have the church just come on board. It's like, this is happening. This is real. Our pastor's going. We're directly, like you said, Kia, directly connected.
We felt such trust. Like, we felt like the congregation trusted and
in,
you know, not just personal trust, but there was that, like, generosity. That was so humbling, I think, to feel like people are in this. They trust us. They believe. Like, their hearts are torn.
Don't you think that, like, that those are the words that I would use for the whole experience we just had, without hesitation?
Yeah.
It became, like, the motto of everything. Like, it's like, should we do this? Yep, let's just go do it. let's
like
go.
They were all in. It seemed like whatever we said, hey, we're going to do this. They're like, okay. Mm-hmm. Yep. And then like an overflow of like, okay, we're all in. We're just going to do it. And it really started going back with Sasha and praying for Ukraine. Yeah. And then when this thing happened, they were just, I mean, we raised that amount of money in like literally a day. And then you guys were off.
Yeah, and then we were gone.
I cannot guess at the full meaning, I just simply succumbed to the first dim beginnings of understanding your radiant love. I was once something without, now I've got someone within. Your voice was soft with relentless whispers, now I am yours. let's begin to shake the world. 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 To shake the world.
You have been listening to Crossing Cultures. The song you just heard was Shake the World by Josh White. You can find his music on any music platform. As we are creating these episodes, the war in Ukraine is still going on. As a church, we are currently involved in financing and aiding our missionary friends and families in Ukraine and Europe. The aid is used to help people get out of Ukraine safely and get needed supplies into the country. If you would like to help donate to this cause, please go to calvarysd.com/Ukraine Relief. You can find this link in the description of this episode. And stay tuned for our next episode of Crossing Cultures titled Aid Agency, as we discuss Phil's experience in Europe after February 24th, 2022. My name is Kia Middleton, and you're listening to Crossing Cultures.